Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
As the summer begins, the presidential race is tightening. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. The latest poll from Associated Press puts President Obama over former Governor Mitt Romney, 47% to 44%, with a three-point edge. Meanwhile, the most recent Gallup poll puts Romney on top, 47 to 45, with a two-point margin. And the political hits just keep on coming. On Capitol Hill, House Republicans appear to be set for a contempt of Congress vote against Attorney General Eric Holder over the Fast and Furious gun scandal. Meanwhile, Governor Mitt Romney has been struggling with how to respond to the president's decision to stop deporting undocumented immigrants under the age of 30 while not alienating the growing Hispanic vote. We'll get into that and more with our panelist, John Barkovich. He's the former chair of the Wicomico County Republican Central Committee. Mike Prettle is with the Democratic Central Committee in Wicomico County, and Salisbury University political science professor Michael Laughlin. Welcome to you all. Well, let's start with the Hispanic part of this. We have both the president and Romney addressing NALEO, National Association of Latin appointed and elected officials, and obviously the key issue has been the idea about the DREAM Act, which the president, of course, and essentially said that he would stop deporting folks that are under the age of 30 with some other provisos. And I want to turn to you, John, first, because there's almost like a two-to-one gap, I think, is what I've seen. Public opinion polls, I think, show like 63% to 20% in terms of Latinos supporting the president. And I can recall in 1984, I was actually at the Republican convention in Dallas, in which I remember at that time Republicans were talking about making a strong pitch to Hispanics, particularly on cultural issues. That was a few years before the 1986 Immigration Reform Act, which under Reagan provided some amnesty as well. Where do you see the Republican Party in terms of the Hispanic vote? Where do you see Romney in terms of the Hispanic vote? And how do you think Romney has handled this decision by the president last week to go ahead and issue this sort of temporary measure in terms of stopping deporting folks under 30?
I think Romney's handling it actually pretty well. His presentation yesterday I thought was excellent in terms of he says that there are parts of the DREAM Act that are appropriate. The Republican Party, though, still the DREAM Act has appeal. And of course, Senator Rubio, one of our rising stars, has in fact proposed or is in the process of putting together his proposal, much of which will include what Obama has tried to present as being his big decision. I think for Hispanics, they still have to look at Obama made a lot of promises, was going to do a lot of stuff, had 2 years with both houses in Congress and got nothing done for the Hispanic population. So I think Romney has to say, the Republican Party has a process that's going to meet the demands that many, many Republicans, as well as the nation as a whole, wants in terms of there are people who are in this country illegally, but through no fault of their own. So I think that's part of what every Republican feels is an issue. Senator Rubio has already expressed that. But we still don't have the other part of that puzzle that we want, which is the borders have to be secured. And they are not, and they haven't been, and it has to be part of that proposal. And so I think for Romney and the Hispanic population, they can talk about the DREAM Act, but he's got a beat on them about their unemployment, about the fact that they don't have jobs in this country. And if he does that, I think the Hispanic population will realize that, yes, the DREAM Act is nice, but, you know, having a job and supporting my family is probably more important.
Well, one of the things, before I go to Mike, one of the things that struck me as I heard some folks who were listening to him at the NALEO gathering was this idea that there were efforts to pass, for instance, the DREAM Act, and it was filibustered in the Senate by Republicans. A lot of the Hispanic leaders seem to blame the Republicans for saying, hey, look, you know, we could have had something, but the Republicans stood in the way. How do you get into that image there that you certainly have?
I just admitted that. Yeah, that until we see the other half of that puzzle, which is securing our borders, there's nothing's going to go forward because we cannot entice people to come to this country illegally by doing things that make it easy for them to assimilate. We have to have tight borders, and then we can do things for the for those illegals that are already here. And I think that's where the Republican Party still wants to go. So that the Dream, I don't think the Republicans as a whole are opposed to aspects of the Dream Act in terms of, again, those people who are here through no fault of their own. But until we see a secure border, that's not going to happen.
Mike Prettl with the Democratic Party here.
Well, I tell you, I have a little bit of a different take on it, I guess. As John knows full well, this administration has done more to spend money, to deport people, to secure the borders than all the previous administrations.
Deport people doesn't secure the borders.
John, it's my turn now.
Sorry.
Than the previous Republican administrations. My understanding is that the proposal that the president came up with or that adopted last week was basically proposed by Senator Rubio 3 years ago, and he promised the Hispanic community 3 years ago that this is something he was going to push through and that he was going to get support and that he was going to get passed. And for 3 years, he's gotten nowhere because, as you pointed out, Don, the opposition of his own party. I mean, when Senator McCain came up with a, you know, and President Bush came up with a with the immigration reform, the Republicans were the ones who opposed it. So the president, after 3 years of letting Senator Rubio attempt to convince his own party that they should adopt this program, the president talked to his attorneys, and they said, you can do that by executive order. And he did, because Rubio hadn't done it. And now Rubio and everyone else is furious because they say the president is overstepping the bounds and is violating the Constitution and all this good stuff. But it's basically a turf battle, and Rubio couldn't deliver on the goods, so the president did. And the Republican Party is now suffering as a result of it.
Michael O'Loughlin, I want to turn to you because sort of stepping back here and looking at this historically, because as I've just mentioned a moment ago, President Reagan had an immigration reform measure which passed, and during the second Bush administration, the second President Bush, during his administration, he actually was able during the election to gather more than 30% of the Hispanic vote. I think it was up towards 40, and there was an effort. Serious effort to pass immigration. How do you see this historical sweep in terms of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, for that matter, in terms of where the Latino vote is going at this point?
Well, this is really one of the Achilles heels, I think, of the Romney campaign, and that is the trend. Clearly, at this point, is moving in the Democratic direction. That is, the Hispanic vote is inching up in terms of the majorities voting Democratic, and Romney, for tactical reasons, I think, dug himself a big ditch during the primaries, where he really was the most anti-immigrant candidate along the panel. I think he was attempting to secure the core voting constituencies within the Republican Party, and that was one tactic to do that. And at this point, he therefore has to now turn to try to appeal to Latino and Hispanic voters to try to dig himself out. But the gap is significant, and it is a real question whether or not he can repair that. So at this point, clearly the trend is Democratic, and if Obama has the ability to win re-election, this could be a decades-long trend as well, because I think that's where it's leading at this point.
I want to turn to Eric Holder. He's the Attorney General, and the House is expected to vote him in contempt of Congress. And this has, of course, been over the Fast and Furious gun scandal, which saw guns sold to drug smugglers that eventually found their way back into the United States. Object of the game, I guess, was to track the guns. That didn't work out too well, and of course, there was at least one agent who was killed. We should note, by the way, that this form of this program certainly began under the Bush administration. John, what do you make of this move by the House, and how advantageous is this politically for the Republicans in the House? Is there a political dimension to this, you think?
Well, everything is political when we're 6 months from an election. But this has been going on for over a year, and I'll take issue with you about the Bush program. The Bush program actually kept track of the guns and actually put people in jail. There's a big difference between actually keeping track of the guns and putting people in jail and sending guns willy-nilly across the border and not being able to track them and resulting in the death of Mr. Terry in the United States, and there's probably the agent that was killed in Mexico was used with those guns as well. So Americans died because of a program that was ill-advised and poorly run. Somebody is responsible for those deaths. Now, Mr. Holder says, I didn't know anything about it. And as always, it's going to be the cover-up that's going to be the issue. With the president coming forward and saying, well, but executive privilege at this late date after this whole process has been going on for an hour certainly raises the issue or makes me suspect as to what might be in those papers and who, in fact, did know about this program and whether those parties responsible have, in fact, lied about it. And it may go into the White House.
Mike Prettl?
Well, as John knows again, I mean, executive privilege has been invoked by every president in the last 30 years or more to protect conversations, discussions that took place within the administration. Matter of fact, if you're a sports fan, you would say, gee, Mr. President Obama has gone longer than any of the earlier presidents in not invoking executive privilege until now. We can dispute the issue, the gun program all you want. I mean, the same people who were running this were running the program under the Bush administration, so it may have a new name to it, but it was basically the same program.
Different.
It certainly went awry, and we all know that. But I mean, Mr. Holder has offered to meet with the committee chair, has met with the committee chair, has offered certain documents. Frankly, if you know anything about the record of Darrell Issa, I mean, he's the most political person in the House today. He obviously wants to make a big issue out of this. He refused to look at the documents that were offered to him. He said, no, we're going to proceed with contempt. This has happened in the past. I mean, it happened under the previous administration, the big flap they had over the U.S. attorneys. You know, it doesn't go anywhere. It's purely a political game. If the House votes to hold him in contempt, which they probably will, it will go then to the U.S. Attorney in the District of Columbia, who is an employee of Mr. Holder, so it's not going to go anywhere. And Mr. Issa knows that. It's just they're just playing political games. And frankly, by the time the election rolls around, it'll be forgotten like most other little tempests in a teapot.
It won't be forgotten. There was a death, and somebody was responsible. And the Terry family, if nobody else, the Terry family will continue to press this issue. And president and executive privilege is usually between discussions of the president and his staff. So that does that mean that the president actually discussed this issue with Mr. Holder?
Well,
and is he, in fact, as Mr. Holder, who has already lied at least twice during this investigation?
I'm sure he would dispute it, but...
Okay. When you say something and then you come back and retract it and say, oh, no, I didn't mean that.
Well, means intent. But I was curious about, and to be clear, by the way, executive privilege has also been extended to, for instance, the Attorney General's office and other executive departments. And the objective, at least the rationale, as I understand it, has to do with deliberations. But one of the things I want to ask you, John, before I get to Michael Laughlin, is there is some on the Republican suggested that this fast and furious and the failing to keep track of the guns and so on, is there merely a plan by the Obama administration to then go ahead and try to restrict gun ownership, in essence go after the Second Amendment? There were some congressional people actually on the Republican side who were expressing that. Do you buy into that?
I think it's certainly possible that that was one of the goals of Fast and Furious, but there's no way to determine that for sure. I think we know that Mr. Obama is not happy with the Second Amendment, and I know Mr. Obama is not happy with the Supreme Court's ruling of the Second Amendment, and he will try to change that, but whether this was in fact that goal or not, I don't know. I still think, though, that an American citizen died as a result of a program established by this government, and someone should be found culpable and pay the price for that decision.
Professor Michael Laughlin, what do you make of this tug-in war that we now see with the executive branch and the Republicans in the House? And certainly we saw the flip side of this, certainly during the Bush administration, over a number of issues which the Bush administration declared executive privilege. And we had disputes not only inside the White House, but obviously as well as the Attorney General's office. How do you see this historically?
Well, I think it's I mean, there's a time-honored tradition for this kind of thing, for the opposition party to try to go after the opposition. The other party is holding the White House. But in this case, I think it seems to me it is a clearly a politically motivated, electorally aligned effort to to further try to show the White House to be corrupt, to be incompetent. But its effect, I think, and this is where I would disagree with John, I agree that some people have died and those things ought to be followed up, to be sure. But I think in terms of that really affecting the electorate for come fall, it seems to me that it's not going to be a factor at all, that what this really will do is to help reinforce those who are already opposed to Obama, perhaps to motivate them further to come out and vote. So it helps to motivate voters on that side. But it isn't going to affect, certainly, supporters of Obama and Democrats generally. And the independent vote, I doubt if that's going to have much effect on them either. Again, these larger economic questions remain the most important factor, the most important variable. So this is more political flack, I think, more than anything else. And I agree with Michael that it won't go anywhere in terms of the actual process.
I accept that. I know it's not going to go anywhere because the process takes forever. Because I still think there's a principled stand taken by the Republicans in Congress to say, an American died, somebody's responsible, and they're going to pay. And so I basically agree with you, but the cover-up issue is still real with Americans. And they see this now with the president stepping in with executive privileges being, there must be something bad there. And I still think, although nothing's going to happen, there's still that for the independents in particular, who are, you know, they're trying to decide which way to go, the idea that, boy, there is some cover-up in here and there's something bad going on. I think that might still play.
John, but you have the most unprincipled man in the Republican side of Congress running the show.
He went to jail.
So, I mean, if you know
that. I think he's doing a great job.
Well, right. That's right.
He gets my vote.
But let me sort of interject one here, though, because the question that I had asked John about this, about the Second Amendment issue, I was curious, and I'm going to you, Michael, it seems to me that issue, whether you believe that, you know, whether that's real or not, but certainly if that is something that certainly some Republican elected officials are talking about, I can understand. I can see where the NRA might very well talk about that as well. Do you think that they could very well then increase some enthusiasm for them turning out in terms, even though to be fair now, the Obama administration, I haven't seen any gun control legislation yet. But go ahead. I mean,
absolutely. It will help to motivate the gun owners and the NRA with simply trying to suggest that the Obama administration in a second term, now they're really going to come out with their anti-gun legislation when there's no indication, right, in the first term that that's the case. So without any real substance, of course, one can engage in these. But this is where the culture wars, I think what we're seeing is the Republican Party, in effect, and allies attempting to gin up the culture war issues, the wedge issues, and perhaps with some effect.
We all know you can't even mention guns without Wayne LaPierre calling a press conference and saying those gun grabbers again.
It's still going to be the economy that's going to be the driving force.
We all agree, John.
And
why bother is because Mitt Romney does face a problem in mobilizing, getting voters excited about him in his own core base. Yep.
That's coming around, though. I think the people are coming around, the Republicans who are supporting Santorum, Gingrich.
Yes.
I think they're starting to come behind Romney because I think Romney has started to show that he's willing to take on Obama and say that this election is because you have to decide this election based on the economy.
But
where we are
today. But he won't say what he's going to do, though. And they keep asking him and asking him.
He doesn't have to say. He says, I'm going to eliminate all those tax breaks.
And they say, which ones? And he says, well, we'll think about that later on, and we'll let you know after the election.
But there's not excitement. I think the question of excitement of your base is an important factor.
Right.
Very, very close
no
elections. You need to get out your core voters.
That's what Wisconsin proved.
But your core voters spent 6 months trying to defeat Romney and find anybody but Romney. And yep. now they've got yep. Romney. They're stuck That's with true. Him. And now they're trying to figure out some
way to Let me pull this back to the economy since we were talking about it. Because one of the interesting stories that came out was that, I think it was a Bloomberg report, which quoted unnamed sources saying that the Romney folks, the Romney campaign, told the governor of Florida to not play up the improvement in the economy there because they didn't play into the vision that the Romney folks had in terms of a deteriorating economy. Now, I understand, by the way, that the Romney people now dispute that. I think the governor may dispute it as well. But nonetheless, you do see, as a matter of fact, a number of places, outside of Florida, Ohio, even Michigan, where you see the unemployment rate dropping. And now you're sort of in this fix because I know that a lot of Republican governors are taking credit for it. But on the other hand, it seems to me that this gives at least some lift to the president.
They're rooting for the economy to fail for election reasons.
They
are rooting, John. They're rooting, and they're That's doing it all over the country.
The issue is that there are a number of states with Republican governors who have turned around their ship of state, their particular ship of state, Florida, Ohio, and Wisconsin. Those are the best examples. And for Romney, the fact that those states are successful, I think, is something that he should use. He should say the same things that these Republican governors have done, i.e., cut spending, reduced regulation, spur small business. He can go to the nation and say, that's what I want for everybody, not just the people who are lucky enough to live in Florida, Ohio, and Wisconsin.
But improving economy, John, also helps the president. That's the problem,
that
right?
Will
on
help
the one
him,
hand, you may have a Republican. If Republican governors have one agenda of saying, gee, because we want to get reelected, on the other hand,
National economy is still going to be in the tank, okay? Because of unemployment's still going up, okay? Europe is turning down. Our economy is already stagnation. I mean, isn't that the word that was used yesterday by the central bank? So that's not going to change. The economy is still going to be bad. There will still be bright lights. Texas, Florida, Ohio, Wisconsin, who happen to all have Republican governors. And so I think that's a positive for Romney, and I think he should use that and say, I'm going to bring that kind of thinking to this nation as a whole.
The problem is it's not simply the objective reality of the economy, it's the question of perception.
Right. It's always perception.
It's perception, right? So, and the public, if indeed you do have some improvements coming about, right, even if they're not as large as would be best, if the perception of people is things are getting better, they're not getting better fast enough, but they're getting better, then that benefits the incumbent. And Obama does benefit. And therefore, Romney still has that's why I do think that these other issues, in case the economic question looks like it's fading in importance, let's, attack with these other issues. You've got to keep that.
Remember the response when Obama said the private sector is doing fine. And that's a reflection of what people perceive, and that was a national response.
Well, it may affect what people perceive, but that's not the perception.
And people perceive that the Romney solution 3 years ago was to let Detroit go bankrupt. Ohio's coming back.
Right.
Is Ohio coming back because they have this wonderful Republican governor who's laying off the teachers and laying off the firefighters, or is it coming back because the auto industry has a huge stake in Ohio and all those auto jobs have come back since Obama
But here's the thing, right? You've got Romney who says, let Detroit go bankrupt. We can discuss
instead of giving it to the unions.
We can debate what that meant.
Right.
But right, and we can see that Michigan's going. And yet, when I look at the public opinion polls, it is a 1-point difference. Obama's 47 and Romney's 46. You would think that the impact, a reflection of the bailouts for the auto industry, would then be reflected, Mike, in a much wider gap between Obama and Romney. Mike Prettl?
Well, I agree. You would think so. I mean, the issue which all three of you have hit on, I mean, it's this idea of perception versus reality. And both sides want it both ways. I mean, both sides want to say, hey, things are getting better.
That's politics.
But they're
That's
not
politics.
Really getting better. Things are terrible. But no, they're getting better, And I mean, it's very difficult for voters to not be confused about who is responsible for whatever gains have been made.
But they can't be confused about their own status.
Just make this point, just to follow up on your point. The closer these elections are, state by state particularly, the more these wedge issues may have an impact.
So I mean,
the strategists on both sides have got to be thinking through all of this stuff. And so the whole hoarder, the holder contempt process is part of this, just in case, perhaps, and the gun issue, if we can persuade Michigan voters that really, you know, if you're unbalanced, you want somebody you can trust in terms of guns, then vote for Trump.
Want to turn to a little state politics. We have a couple of things that are going to be on the ballot. One is the state's DREAM Act, which apparently allows undocumented students to receive in-state tuition rates at a community college, provided they've attended a Maryland high school for at least 3 years, and their families can show proof of having paid state taxes. After completing 60 credit hours equal to 2 years of full-time study, the students can then transfer to a four-year college or university in Maryland and continue to pay the reduced rate. This was finally, the courts let this go to the ballot. Obviously, this will probably play certainly a little into the national issue that we started the hour with. Mike Prettl, I want to turn to you. How do you see this playing out? And I mean, I have not seen any public opinion polls, but
I think the polls have shown majorities you had in the legislature, you know, and I mean, I think it makes all the sense in the world. I think it's a good proposal, and I think it's a proposal that's very easy to demagogue, and I think it's probably going to go down because the Republican extremists are going to demagogue it, and they're going to mislead people about it, and they have succeeded in convincing a lot of people that it's a bunch of illegal people trying to take advantage. They ignore the fact that it only applies to a very limited number of students whose parents have paid taxes for a number of years and that sort of thing. So, you know, but I don't think that gets across to the voters, and I'm going to work to see that it gets upheld, but I think it's probably going to be shot down by Republican extremist.
John Bargovich, how do you see this playing out? I mean, obviously, I'm assuming.
I think it's probably going to go down. Yeah. I mean, the problem for Marylanders is we still have, you know, a state that's in deficit. We have unemployment, although it's better than many other states. I still think people are going to say, you know, we don't have enough money to do what we need to do for this state. Why do we want to give money to people who have broken the law? Because remember, they're still illegal. And I think that issue will play in there. And
it will
dovetail with the gay marriage referendum. And I think that will, the two together, I think.
But one, the answer to your question, John, is because these students are the ones who are going to make Maryland a more prosperous state in the future. Data has shown.
I have great sympathy. And they are kids, but you mentioned the other one about marriage equality, making gay marriage legal. You know, and initially when this thing came actually out of the state legislature, the polling wasn't really so great on it. But then, as we all recall, President Obama said that yes, he favored gay marriage, and we saw a dramatic turnaround. Something now, I saw the latest poll is 57% of likely voters would uphold the same-sex marriage plan, as opposed to 37% that would not. And that represents apparently something like a 12-point shift in the identical survey just last March. John, what do you make of that, that dramatic shift? I mean, some people obviously have attributed to Obama's statements, but...
Well, that may be the case. Gay marriage has not been successful in any referendum anywhere. I mean, do I remember California? California, the left coast even couldn't get...
The Mormons dumped how many millions of dollars into fighting
And I hope they dump some millions here in Maryland. I appreciate their donation. I still think that gay marriage as an issue, still, if this state votes for it, it'll be the first time. And I just don't see that happening, particularly if the Obama people are not motivated, okay, and the Republican base is. This is one of those little issues that might get somebody to go to the polls and vote Republican who might not have gone otherwise, but they feel very strongly about gay marriage. And in fact, the African-American population still has...
Although we have seen a major shift.
Well, that's what happened.
The
shift took place before Obama came out. The shift took place in the legislature. Yeah.
The only poll that counts is the one in November.
What happened in the legislature last year when it failed was that the African-American, the Black caucus was pretty much opposed to it. This year, the Black caucus split, and the older African Americans right. voted against it, but the young Turks and the Black Caucus voted very strongly mm-hmm. for it. And frankly, there's been a big debate within the Black community over
of course,
this. And,
of course.
And frankly, the gay marriage initiative is winning. And you know, whether it's enough to carry the day or not remains to be seen.
I don't know. If we have Catholics voting against Obama, if we have the Black clergy voting against Obama, I think the Hispanic vote becomes less important.
I think that the dynamic in Maryland, as you well know, the 2-to-1 ratio, it always is a depressing reality for Republican right. voters in a presidential election.
Of course.
But I think you're right that these other wedge issues may help to gin that up. However, I do think in this case, I mean, there's always a first time, right? Just because it has failed in other states doesn't mean it can't succeed here. And that the dynamic is different when you've had the president, I mean, Obama, particularly the first African-American president, make this kind of statement, and it has clearly had...
Make it a civil rights issue,
it's
basically.
It's basically made it a civil rights issue and has turned the tide within the African-American community. So the African-American community, which is going to come out big in Maryland, that will be the deciding segment, I think, that can turn this issue. So we could see in fact, a split on those two referenda, I think.
And we have to leave it at there. We've been talking with John Barkovich. He's the former chair of the Wicomico County Republican Central Committee. Mike Predel, he's with the Wicomico Democratic Central Committee. And Salisbury University political science professor, Michael Laughlin. And we appreciate you all talking about politics. We'll do it again. You've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.